Welcome to the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. It's June 30, 2015, and this is episode 478. Following up on my first impressions blog post from last week, this is my full review of the new Canon EOS 5DS R 50 megapixel ultra high resolution digital SLR camera. Since my first review, I've spent three more days in the field, shooting a total of 2,300 frames with the camera and completed a bunch of tests in my studio, so I'm ready to share my findings. Before we start, I just want to mention a few things about this review. I'm in no way supported by or affiliated with Canon, and I've paid for my 5DS R and all of my lenses just like you. I do these reviews to first and foremost inform myself and you, the readers and listeners, about new gear that is released to the market that I personally am interested in and that I believe that you may be interested in too. Some of the links in the review are affiliate links. I'm a full-time photographer and this is partly how I make my living. But this does not affect my views expressed in my reviews in any way. I tell it like it is, good, bad, or indifferent. I'm lucky enough to own some of Canon's best lenses, and that's what I'm basing my tests on. So I can't comment on their older lenses, but so far I have shot with the 11-24mm f4L lens, the 24-70mm f2.8L lens, the Mark II version, the 70-200 f2.8L Mark II version, the 100-400 f4.5-5.6L Mark II, and the 200-400mm f4 lens with the 1.4x extender built in. We'll look at example images from each of these, including 100% crops, as we progress. To view the images at the largest size available on the website, click on them. If the image is almost filling the browser window, open up your browser a little bit more until the images have a larger border around them, and then you'll know that you're viewing the images pixel for pixel at 100%. The images will automatically advance every 6 seconds, but if you'd like to stop that, just place your mouse over the image. You can also move back and forth with your mouse or keyboard arrow keys, or by tapping on the left or right side of the image on mobile devices. Also note that I'll be comparing features with the 5D Mark III and in some areas the 7D Mark II, and discussing some new features that I think are useful. I'm not going to go through every feature of the camera, just those that interest me and hopefully will interest you too. There are plenty of other sites that simply drone through feature lists, so please reference them or visit Canon's website if that's what you're looking for. Note that if you usually follow along with the Enhanced podcast, partly because of a problem with the format at the moment that Apple do not seem to be able to fix, but also just because of the sheer number of images that we're looking at today, I'm not going to embed every image. I'll put some key photos in here and there, but you're really going to have to go to the blog post to check out the images and make comparisons and view them as large as possible as well. So go to mbp.ac/478 to check out the wealth of images that we're going to attach to this blog post. So let's jump into it. First of all, there are a few preconceptions going around, which I had also believed would hold back a camera of this resolution. So let's first take a look at my initial expectations. Before I bought my 5DS R, I expected the camera to record slightly soft images because 50 megapixels is such a high resolution. I was expecting that many of my lenses would not be able to resolve light down to a fine enough point to create a sharp image. I was wrong on this. I'm using top-end lenses, yes, but so far, every one of them is performing outstandingly. I also expected ISO performance to drop dramatically from around ISO 800, and start to absolutely suck from around 1600. I just couldn't see how pixels this small could perform well in low light. I was wrong on this too, as we'll see. I expected this camera to be virtually impossible to shoot handheld and still get sharp images, but because the pixels again are so small, even the slightest movement of the camera will take the light that should have been focused on one pixel and blur it into the next pixel. I was wrong on this as well. Okay, so let's take a look at some of my example images from the last week or so to show you how capable this camera is before we move on to some test shots. If you would like to also see all of the images from my first afternoon with this camera around Shinjuku here in Tokyo, take a look at my first impressions review, which I'll link in the blog post. Okay, so I picked up my Canon EOS 5DSR here in Tokyo on the morning of its release here in Japan on June 18th, 2015. I took a few lenses with me and the accessories that I needed so that I could start testing the new camera right away. After picking up the camera, I went to the coffee shop around the corner from the camera store, put on the strap and my old battery grip from the 5D Mark III that works with the 5DS as well, and I left my Really Right Stuff L bracket on the battery grip, which also fits fine. This is great as it makes upgrading from the 5D Mark III much more painless financially than it could have been. I then went through the menus and changed things like the histogram from the brightness histogram to RGB. I changed the color space of the images from sRGB to Adobe RGB, and I stopped the camera from being able to shoot images without a CF card. I could never understand why Canon makes their cameras default to being able to shoot without memory. That makes no sense to me. I walked back down the street again and shot the first few images handheld, and here is the first image that I looked at, the sixth frame that I shot with the camera. As I said, I fully expected that this would give me blurry images at this resolution, but when I hit the magnify button and zoomed in to one-to-one view of the image, I almost dropped the camera. I'm not kidding you, the hair on the back of my head stood on end. This is the image that I looked at as the center, a 100% crop of the center of the sixth frame that I shot with the camera. Keep in mind that this image was shot handheld at 125th of a second, f8 at ISO 160, 16mm with the EF 11-24mm f4L lens. As I said, I was expecting hand-holding to be virtually impossible at this resolution, but it works. I consider myself to have a relatively steady hand when shooting, but I'm not superhuman, so this should be within reach for anyone that is comfortable shooting a digital SLR camera. Note that all of the full-size images that we'll look at are resized to 1440 pixels wide for the web. The 100% crops are exactly 1440 times 960 pixels cropped from the original images without any resizing. They're pixel for pixel. There's nothing done to these other than the default sharpening that Lightroom applies to all images on import unless you change it. How can we hand hold at this resolution? Well, at this point, I'm assuming it's down to Canon incorporating a new mirror vibration control system. Here is a quote from Canon's website. The camera shake that occurs from the impact of an SLR's mirror can leave blurred details in the recorded image. This effect is magnified when working with a super high resolution sensor like the one in the EOS 5DSR camera. To counter the effects of conventional spring-driven SLR mirrors, the EOS 5DSR features a newly developed mirror vibration control system. The camera's mirror is not controlled by springs, but instead is driven by a small motor and cams. This system suppresses the impact typical of a camera's mirror, significantly reducing impact and its effect on the image. It seems to have done the trick, as I didn't get a single blurred frame out of the first 200 handheld images that I shot during my first afternoon with the 5DSR. As I have shot more, especially with long focal lengths, I can't claim 100% sharpness anymore, but I found that it's possible to hand hold even when using the EF 100-400mm f4.5-5.6L lens, the Mark II version. Although it's not fast-paced wildlife work, for part of my field tests, I decided to visit the snow monkeys, as this year's babies are around 6 weeks old at this point and promise to be as cute as can be. Here is a shot of a six-week-old snow monkey looking at his older brother, made at 220mm with the 100-400mm at f8, ISO 800 for a 500th of a second. And here now is a 100% pixel-for-pixel crop of the baby monkey's face, which is where I had focused. Keep in mind that this is ISO 800 as well. There isn't enough noise to concern me, although I do expose to the right, which helps to keep the noise down in the light areas. Now, I know what you're thinking, that's only 220mm, so here's another shot that I made at 400mm, handheld. This is a white baby snow monkey shot at f8, ISO 400 for a 400th of a second. And here is the 100% crop of the baby's face. Although I did have maybe a 5% fail rate shooting with the longer focal lengths, this was mostly due to the subject moving quickly during the exposure or a focusing error on my part rather than difficulty in hand-holding. While we're looking at long focal length examples, here's one last snow monkey shot made with the EF 200-400mm f4L lens with the 1.4x extender built in. And this is with the extender engaged for a focal length of 540mm, almost the full extent of this lens. This was not, however, handheld. Although this lens can be handheld if absolutely necessary, it's generally better to use a tripod, regardless of the camera, you know, whatever camera you're using. And as you can see from this 100% crop, the 200-400mm has no problem keeping up with the resolution of the 5DSR, which is a huge relief as it costs more than a small car. I would have been devastated if this lens was out-resolved by the 5DSR. Okay, so moving away from snow monkeys now, let's take a look at a bit of landscape work. Here's another example photo from the 100-400mm at 148mm f10 ISO 100 for 0.8 seconds. And here is the 100% crop. The detail here simply blows me away. To continue with examples from various lenses, here is a shot made with the 24-70mm f2.8L lens Mark II version at f11 ISO 100 for 100th of a second exposure. And here is the 100% crop of the same image. The other lens that I've used is the 70-200mm f2.8L Mark II lens, which is what I used for the tests that we'll look at next, so you'll get a chance to see the image quality from that lens as well. So let's move on to some image quality and ISO performance test results. We already know that the increase in resolution is going to hit the ISO performance to a degree. But let's see just how much noise becomes apparent in our images as we increase stop for stop from ISO 50 to ISO 12,800 on the 5DSR. First, here's a series of images resized for web so that you can see the realistic effect of increasing the ISO for web images. And as I said earlier, because of the sheer number of images that we're going to look at from this point, all I've done is embedded the ISO 100 image to give you an idea of what we're looking at. You're really going to need to go to the website at mbp.ac/478 and view the images over there to get an idea of what we're looking at here now. For this first set of 9 images, it's almost a waste of bandwidth showing you all 9 of them, because I'm sure you'll agree that even up to ISO 12800, if you are going to be downsizing for the web, you can crank the ISO up to a maximum of the maximum that the camera will go to with the expanded ISO of 12800 without any concern. But that doesn't mean that there is no grain at all. Here is a series of images, the 100% crops of the Shisa, the Okinawan mythical dog lion thing that I've used as part of the test image. And again, just go to the blog and take a look at these. And also, as you look at the images, take a look at the green patches and the black bands in the background as well to see how the grain starts to affect the outer focus areas of each image. Your own tolerance for grain may well be different from mine, but personally, based on what I'm seeing here, I'll be setting my soft ceiling for ISO at 3200, pretty much as I've been doing in the field already, but also using up to ISO 6400 if necessary, and 12800 at a push. Note though that I have exposed these images with the white eyes of the Shisa and the white patches on the color checker chart so that they're on the far right side of the histogram. This is a technique called exposing to the right, or ETTR, and if you don't do this, you may find that your images are darker with the data in the middle of the histogram, and that will almost certainly lead to seeing more grain than I'm seeing here. So it really depends how you expose your images as well. But do note that this image was basically zero exposure compensation. I was in manual mode, but if you set up the same test with the same variety of tones and colors, even without exposing to the right, this is what you'd see. So I've set up a page for you to download the ISO 100 test photo from the above set. I wanted to give you a chance to actually just look at the quality. I can't set up a way for you to download the whole set of images because it would be just too much bandwidth. The file that I'm going to enable you to download is already 60 megapixels, but basically it's the raw file right out of the camera so that you will be able to take a look at the image quality of this test shot. And because the file is 60 megapixels, if I just put it into the blog post so that anyone could click it without really wanting to see it, it would just bring our server to its knees. So I'm going to put the download link behind a newsletter subscription form. So if you want it, it's there. If you would like a copy, just go to the page that I'm linking on the blog post. It's right there below these tests. So it just says visit the download page here. I've also included the XMP sidecar file, but all that does is set the white balance, so you don't necessarily need that. But do ensure that if you don't also copy the XMP sidecar file along with the raw file, ensure that you use the white balance picker in Lightroom or Adobe Camera Raw and set the white balance from one of the white or grey patches on the color checker card there. Let's also take a look at how the 5DSR compares to the 5D Mark III, which will probably be of interest for many current 5D Mark III owners. Here is the 100% crop image from the ones that we just looked at, but now with the 5D Mark III images at the same ISO inserted after each 5DSR image. I've also included the last few higher ISO images from the 5D Mark III for reference, but these are not available on the 5D SR. Note that you see more of the image from the 5D Mark III because I'm cropping down to exactly 1440 by 960 pixels at 100% without any resizing. To show you the exact same section of the photograph, I'd have to resize the 5D Mark III images, and that would basically nullify the test. Once again, you'll need to look on the blog post to see these if you're not already there. So, looking at these results, I'm actually thinking that there is very little difference in the amount of noise that you can see in these image pairs right up to 12,800, the maximum ISO on the 5D SR. The 5D Mark III goes higher, but in practice, I have hardly ever used my 5D Mark III, or 1DX for that matter, above 12,800. I checked my images in Lightroom and see a handful of images at some of the higher ISOs, but from 12,800, I have over 600 images from the field. So this tells me that if I can go as high as 12,800, that's going to cover most of my low light shooting needs as well. So I'm happy. I also think it was a gutsy move on Canon's part to not just include higher ISOs, probably just to please the marketing team. Because as we can see from the 5D Mark III high ISO images, they really aren't much use anyway. I don't have the software to perform scientific dynamic range tests, but one thing that we can glean from the test photos that I've shot and from my experience in the field is that the 5D SR does have very slightly reduced dynamic range compared to the 5D Mark III. We can tell this from comparing the readings from the white and black patches in the color checker chart in our test photos. The top left patch on the card is pure white, and using the white balance picker in Lightroom, I checked that this has a luminosity of 93.5% in the images from the 5D SR and 94% in the 5D Mark III images. The black patch above the letter L on in the bottom row has a reading of 1.5% on the 5D SR image and 4% in the 5D Mark III image. From this, we can tell that the darkest black is 2% lighter in the 5D Mark III image than it is in the 5DS image. This isn't very scientific, but it does show us a slightly reduced dynamic range in the 5D SR, as the blacks are darker in relation to the whites. Of course, we'll need to see what the dynamic range is reported as from sites like DxOMark when they have completed their test, but I'd say that we're talking maybe a third of a stop less dynamic range in practice than the 5D Mark III, or perhaps not even that much. The pixels on the 5DSR sensor are 4.14 microns square compared to 6.25 microns square on the 5D Mark III. And that means that the 5D Mark III's pixels are 2.28 times larger than those on the 5DSR sensor. With this in mind, I'd say that it's quite amazing that the dynamic range only drops by such a small amount. Also, keep in mind that in practice, the images do have plenty of dynamic range as long as you expose your images well for the highlight areas. Here's an example image from my field tests where there was a very bright sky to the right, and at first glance you'd think that the foreground was too underexposed to do anything with. Here though is the same image after a little bit of work in Lightroom, namely some blacks and shadow slider tweaks, a little clarity, and a graduated filter across the sky to bring back that dynamic stormy feel. This was shot at 15mm at f14, ISO 100 for 1/60th of a second. And if you're thinking, yeah, but I'll bet that foreground is all grainy having brought out that much detail, here's the 100% crop. Let's move on now to a few of the other features of the 5DSR and work in some comparisons that I know people are interested in hearing about. One thing that's come up a lot is the ability to use a full frame camera and crop the images down to the equivalent of a 1.6 times crop factor camera like the 7D Mark II. Of course, the 5DSR has a much slower frame rate at 5 frames per second compared to 10 frames per second of the 7D Mark II. But the question is, if you can live with the slower frame rate, is using the 5DSR in crop mode a viable alternative to save you buying or traveling with both cameras? Well, to help with this, Canon have added some interesting crop / aspect ratio settings. Basically, if you know that you're going to crop down to say 1.6 crop times crop factor, as though you were shooting with a crop factor camera like the 7D Mark II, you can go ahead and set the camera up to shoot in 1.6 times crop factor mode. You can also select 1.3 times, which is the same as the old 1D series cameras, up to the 1DX, which is now full frame. There is also a 1:1, so square, and a 4:3 and 16:9 aspect ratios to choose from. But I've only done tests with the 1.6 crop factor to emulate and compare with the 7D Mark II. The cool thing about how these crop factor modes work is that if you're shooting in RAW, the camera actually still shoots full-size RAW files, but adds the crop information to the image file. And what's more, Canon made a surprisingly intelligent decision to make this information understandable by Lightroom and Adobe Camera Raw. So when you import your images, they are automatically cropped down to the chosen ratio. That means if you go into the crop tool, you can change that crop and enlarge if necessary, all the way back up to the original full-sized image if you need to. When shooting in a crop mode, you can choose to either mask out or just add an outline frame in the intelligent viewfinder so that you can see which part of the image is inside your crop. If you are shooting in live view, only the cropped area is visible. The results of my test with the 5DSR in 1.6 times crop mode, doing a direct comparison to the 7D Mark II, turned out quite interesting. Let's look at basically the same image from both cameras. These are straight out of the camera, except that I have adjusted the white balance by selecting the top center white patch on the color checker card. Here first is the image from the 5DSR. And here is the 7D Mark II image, shot with the same lens mounted to the tripod with a lens collar. I just switched out the cameras. Click on the images on the blog to see them larger, but you'll notice that there is a clear drop in image quality of the 7D Mark II images, and the 5DR images have better color. This isn't anything to do with the crop factor, this is just something to bear in mind. Here now is a 100% crop of the Shiso on which I focused so that you can check the image quality. And again, click on these on the blog. You really got to see these large to be able to appreciate this. And here is the 7D Mark II 100% crop. Notice that the 7D Mark II has a very slightly larger image. The 5DSR images are 5,430 by 3,620 pixels compared to the fractionally larger 5,472 by 3,648 pixel images from the 7D Mark II. These photos were shot at f11 ISO 100 for 0.5 seconds. What this means is that if you're going to buy one camera, you could go now for the 5DSR and crop in so far that you could get an almost identical resolution image in 1.6 times crop mode than you would get from the 7D Mark II, But as you can see, the image quality from the 5D SR is better. As I said, the 7D Mark II shoots at 10 frames per second compared to 5 frames per second on the 5D SR, and the AF points cover a larger area of the screen on the 7D Mark II. So for birds in flight or sports, the 7D Mark II is probably still got the edge, especially if you know you're going to crop and don't need 50 megapixels, but you will need to give your images a little bit more of a boost in post-processing to bring the image quality back. Indeed, I've found myself adding more clarity to my 7D Mark II wildlife images, and when necessary, the saturation is also getting tweaked a little bit more than I usually would for wildlife work. This is not to say that the 7D Mark II is a bad camera, it's great, but now you're armed with the information that you need to make your own buying decisions based on these examples. While I was shooting with the 7D Mark II, I also did a comparison between the ISO performance of the 5D SR and the 7D Mark II. This is actually slightly difficult to compare because of the slightly reduced image quality of the 7D Mark II. But my tests have shown that the two cameras have very similar ISO performance. On the 5D SR, the highest ISO you can select with the expanded ISO settings turned on is 12,800. And as we saw, this is really quite acceptable in terms of noise. The 7D Mark II goes up to 51,200 in expanded ISO settings, but this is really quite rough. You can see my full 7D Mark II ISO test results in my 7D Mark II review that I'll link on the blog post if you're interested. So we won't go through all of these again today. Here, though, is a comparison between the highest 5D SR ISO, 12,800, and the 7D Mark II at the same ISO. The 7D Mark II perhaps looks very slightly better because the image is paler and the grain seems coarser in the 5D SR image. But if you look at places like the black dot of the Shisa's eye, you can probably tell that the amount of grain is actually about the same. Before we move on to look at some of the nice new features that I'm enjoying on the 5D SR, let's take a brief look at the physical differences between the 5D SR and the 5D Mark III. At 152x116x76.4mm, both the 5D SR and the 5D Mark III are exactly the same size. The 5D SR, though, weighs in at 930 grams based on CIPA standards, and I believe that includes the battery, and 845 grams for the body only. And the 5D Mark III weighs in at 950 grams based on the CIPA standards, or 860 grams for the body alone, which means that the 5D SR is slightly lighter, which is always a nice development. As you can see, there are a few subtle differences in the design, but they're very similar. From the back, the only visible difference is the exclusion of the direct print icon below the info button. The 5DS R is on the right in all of these photos, by the way. On the top of the camera, the only visible difference is that we've lost the silver ring around the mode dial, but I think I prefer the new design here too. Okay, so enough comparing. Let's take a look at some of the nice new features of the 5D SR. I probably should have already known about these features beforehand, but I honestly didn't have much time to read up on the camera before I picked up mine. So these came as a nice surprise to me as I looked through the camera menus at the coffee shop on that first day. First up is the Intelligent Viewfinder 2. I was relieved when I saw that the Intelligent Viewfinder 2 had been used in the 5D SR. I first started using this with the 7D Mark II and instantly fell in love with the ability to display so much information right there in the viewfinder. I also like that you can now display the digital level permanently in the viewfinder. I used to set up my last generation cameras so that the multifunction button would enable me to just display the level for a few seconds after pressing it, but that wasn't ideal. Now it's just there whenever I half press the shutter button, which is great. I was pleasantly surprised to see a new built-in bulb timer for long exposures. Traditionally, 30 seconds was the longest in-camera exposure we could achieve before it was necessary to attach a cable release or a remote timer and go to bulb mode. Then either time your shots while depressing the cable release or set your shutter speed on the remote timer. We still have to go to bulb mode, which is fine, but now there's a timer built right into the camera, so it's no longer necessary to use a cable release. If you also start your exposure with a 2-second timer, that gives you time to take your hand away from the camera and give it time for the movement from touching the camera to die down before it actually starts the exposure. Great stuff. I was also happy to see that the 5DSR has a built-in intervalometer, so we can now do time-lapse photography without a remote timer or intervalometer as well. Another nice touch. Something else that I absolutely love is the custom quick control screen. This is similar to the quick control screen that we've had for a few generations of Canon camera bodies now, but now we can choose what is displayed, how wide, and where on the screen it's displayed. This photo shows you how I've set up my quick custom control screen. Because I've now disabled the standard quick control screen, when shooting, if I hit the Q button that we can see on the right of this photo, I am brought directly into this custom screen. Another great new feature. By the way, I did not shoot this image on April 1st, just a minute before midnight. This is just what gets displayed when you start to customize the screen. I had to wait for my 5DSR just like everybody else. I know that some people are wondering about this, so let's just consider too if we really need 50 megapixels. Personally, I'll take every megapixel I can get if it doesn't result in the sensor out-resolving my lenses and doesn't give me really bad ISO performance. I could have lived with having to use a tripod for more of my shooting, but fortunately that's not the case, as handheld shooting is just not a problem. I took a gamble when I reserved my 5DSR back in February while on the bus on the last day of my Winter Wonderland tour, but I'm glad that I didn't sit on the fence and miss out on getting mine on the day of the launch, because none of these three possible issues affects this camera. If you only shoot for the web and never print your work, and you don't sell images commercially, then you perhaps don't need this many megapixels. I have almost lost commercial image sales in the past though, because my 12 megapixel files weren't large enough. I was able to provide alternative shots at 21 megapixels and still close the deal, but it was a close call. For the same job, if I'd had 50 megapixel images, it would have been a no-brainer for the client, as they wanted to print the images at 5 meters wide. For me, using a 50 megapixel camera makes my images more saleable. I'm basically future-proofing my images that I work hard to create. It also gives me the ability to print larger without upsizing, and I can crop more if necessary. How you proceed is for you to decide based on your own situation and requirements. The other thing to consider is whether to go for the 5DS or the 5DSR, which is the one that I went for. The 5DSR is pretty much the same camera, but the R has the low-pass filter effect cancelled. Here's how Canon describes it. With all the features and capabilities of the EOS 5DS, the EOS 5DSR camera offers the potential for even greater sharpness and fine detail for specialized situations. It features the same Canon-designed and manufactured 50.6 megapixel sensor with the low-pass filter effect cancelled to provide even more fine edge sharpness and detail for critical subjects such as detailed landscapes and other situations where getting the sharpest subject detail is a priority. And then there's an asterisk says that the possibility of moire and color artifacts is greater due to the low pass filter cancellation function. I have not shot with the 5DS, so I have no idea how much sharper the 5DSR is by comparison. But unless you think moire is going to be a big problem for you, I'd recommend going for the 5DSR. I've so far seen no ill effects of cancelling that low pass filter in the sort of shooting that I do. Another thing that I've been asked is, do the files take forever to process? I was pleasantly surprised by the processing speed of the files. Sure, the transfer of the files to the computer takes longer than usual. I'm using a USB 3 card reader and I'm now finding that after a full day of shooting, it takes about twice as long to transfer my files to the computer. But when I've shot a lot, I just let that run in the background as I do something else. The files also take a couple of seconds longer to res in Lightroom. With my 5D Mark III 22 megapixel files, I used to have to wait about half a second or so. And now it can take up to 2, sometimes 3 seconds, which is nowhere near as slow as I was expecting it to be. So I can live with this. At the time of this review, I'm using Lightroom 6 build 2015.1 on a mid-2013 27-inch iMac with 32 gigabytes of RAM and a Fusion drive. And I'm also working on a late 2012 MacBook Pro Retina with 16 gigabytes of RAM and an SSD drive. My Lightroom catalog and images are transferred directly to a Drobo Mini connected via Thunderbolt, which makes it slightly slower than working directly on the internal hard drive, but it still runs fine and enables me to move the drive between both computers without copying the catalog and images around. Okay, so what do I think is missing from the 5DSR? At this point, the only thing that I'm disappointed about with the 5DSR is that it does not come with GPS built in. When I bought the 7D Mark II, it came with this, and I thought that all future Canon bodies would have GPS built in by default, but I was wrong. I understand that Canon were following the design of the 5D Mark III, which also does not have GPS, but they were able to do so much elsewhere that this is a bit of a letdown. I now have to continue to use my GPE2 GPS unit to geotag my images. But this is the only thing that I can find at this point that I would like to have seen in this camera. Sure, there's other stuff like built-in Bluetooth to pair this with my other cameras and have the ability to synchronize key settings like shutter speed, aperture, and ISO as I change settings, but that's been on my wish list for so long now, I've almost given up on it. Okay, so my conclusions. You could probably sense from this review that I'm literally blown away by the 5DSR. Even if my expected limitations had been true, I would have loved this camera, but none of them are affecting it. So I truly believe that the Canon EOS 5DSR is an engineering marvel. I honestly don't think I'm going to be able to go back to using another camera after experiencing the image quality and resolution of the 5DSR. My original plan was to keep my 5D Mark III as a backup body, but with my Namibia tour and Iceland tours coming up, the thought of going back to 22 megapixels if something happens is so scary that I've actually ordered a second 5DSR. That's how much I love this camera. As I said, I've shot some 2,300 images so far and will be sharing more photos that we didn't take a look at today in the coming weeks. Of course, as this is now my main camera, most of what I publish from now on will be from the 5DSR, so I urge you to subscribe to our newsletters if you don't already to keep up with my antics. and you can do so at mbp.ac/news, N-E-W-S. And if you have found this review useful and intend to pick up your own 5DS or 5DSR, you can help to support my efforts by purchasing from our friends at B&H with the links that I put into the blog post. And you can get straight over there if you want to just type it into your browser. Use the link mbp.ac/BH5DS. And once you've done that, everything that you buy there for a while will be credited to Martin Bailey Photography, so you'll be really helping to support our efforts here. And note that if you already have a 5D Mark III battery grip, the BGE11, you don't need to buy this again, they're the same. Of course, this review and my recommendations are based entirely on my own experiences and in no way biased to encourage affiliate purchases. I paid for the 5DSR and lenses used myself, and I've received no third-party compensation in exchange for or in relation to this review. So thanks very much for listening today. That was a long one. The first time we've gone this long for a while, but I do hope it was useful for you. If you enjoy this podcast, please share a link with your friends, and if you don't already, please subscribe in iTunes or your favorite podcast program to ensure uninterrupted delivery. You can find me on Google+, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, and links to everything that I'm up to are right there at martinbaileyphotography.com. So do drop by and take a look. I'll be back next week with another episode, but in the meantime, you take care and have a great week, whatever you're doing. Bye-bye.